Podcasting from behind her locked bathroom door, the only quiet place in the house, this is the Homeschool Sanity Show, a twice-monthly podcast with expert advice for happier, healthier homeschool living. And now, here's your host, Christian psychologist and homeschool mom of six, Dr. Melanie Wilson.
Welcome to today's podcast titled, How to Give Your Kids Confidence in Creation. My guest today is Dr. Carl Werner. Dr. Werner received his undergraduate degree in biology with distinction at the University of Missouri, graduating summa cum laude with highest honors. He received his doctoral degree in medicine at the age of 23. He is the author of Evolution, the Grand Experiment book series, and is the executive producer of Evolution, the Grand Experiment television series, which has played in 70 countries, including both European and North American television networks. The Grand Experiment has won numerous film awards, including a gold medal for excellence in music for a documentary film, best curriculum, best youth film, and best documentary over $50,000. Dr. Werner and his wife have traveled over 160,000 miles to 9 countries on 4 continents for the series. The series integrates on-location footage at 60 natural history museums, 20 dig sites, and interviews with 60 leading scientists, including Dr. Don Johansson, the discoverer of Lucy, National Geographic scientist Paul Sereno, and the late F. Clark Howell, plus scores of other museum curators. His books and DVDs are used in both homeschooling, public and parochial grade schools, high schools, and universities. Many public libraries, university libraries, and the Library of Congress carry his book series, which is published by New Leaf Press. Debbie Werner, principal photographer for the book series, has received 2 museum requests to display her fossil photographs. She is an avid naturalist and the wife of Dr. Carl Werner. She received her Bachelor of Science degree from Excelsior College in Albany, New York. She is the principal videographer and producer of Evolution, the Grand Experiment video series. I have to admit that Dr. Carl Werner and his wife, Debbie, are good friends of mine, but that wasn't always the case. Just several years ago, I was asked by my husband to invite Dr. Werner into our home to tell us about his creation evolution research. It was really evolution research, but as soon as I heard that, I said, oh, I already know all about that. You know, I've watched Answers in Genesis videos. I really don't want to have him come over. And my husband was, you know, really like-minded. He said, yeah, you know, he's a guy I knew, you know, when I was in school, and he's friends with my sister, and she really wanted me to have him over. But, yeah, I'll just tell him that. It's just not a good time. So he left to go call Dr. Werner and tell him, yeah, we just really weren't that interested in having him over. And he came back to me and he said, well, he's coming over, actually. And I said, what? He said, yeah, you know, I just didn't have the heart to tell him that he couldn't come over. So, you know, the whole time I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, I already know that evolution isn't true and that creation, as it's described in the Bible, is really the truth. But it turns out that Dr. Werner came over to our home and presented us with his research, and I was absolutely blown away. Not saying anything against Answers in Genesis's materials, because they have been such a blessing in my home. But so many of the details that I just had to assume that God was right, the Bible was right, and the evolutionists were wrong, was just made crystal clear to me by talking with Dr. Werner, and I think he will make it crystal clear for you too. So, Carl, I'm going to call you now because we are friends. I am hoping that you are going to tell our listeners the fascinating story that you told me the first night that we met about how you became an author on the subject of evolution.
Well, thank you, Melanie. And I guess I can call you Melanie since we are friends instead of Dr. Wilson, the psychologist yes. And PhD that you are. You know, I was a science geek in high school, and I had won international awards in high school for research I had performed in the University of Missouri on food preservatives while in high school. And I was at a four-year scholarship at the University of Missouri and believed in evolution based on just common knowledge. It was knowledge that I've seen in the textbooks that evolution was true. At the PBS, this, you know, discovery type of television shows, at the Natural History Museums, there was no question in my mind that there was any debate about creation versus evolution. And while I was in college, biology degree, medical school, a friend asked me this question at the age of 19. He said, "Carl, you believe in all this, but how can you deal with these problems that contradict the naturalism, the natural theories?" And I asked my friend, "Well, what are you talking about? What theories or laws contradict evolution and the other naturalistic theories like the Big Bang and life starting from chemicals?" And he started laying these out over dinner, over pizza, and I was just dumbfounded. I had no answers for him. For example, he said, "You know, you believe in the Big Bang model of that the universe formed itself. How would you explain how matter comes about, given the fact that matter doesn't form naturally from nothingness based on the first law of thermodynamics?" You know, and I had no answer for that. And he said, "How would you explain the orderliness of the universe that we see today in the planetary system with the elliptical orbits of our planets going around the sun and then our little tiny planetary system in this beautiful spiral galaxy called the Milky Way galaxy, and then that's just one of 10 to the 11th galaxies or spiral, beautiful. How would you account for this order of the universe coming from an explosion or a Big Bang, since you know, Carl, that the second law of thermodynamics says that order doesn't come out of disorder. Naturally, only order goes to more disorder." And, you know, I had no answers for that. And then he just went on and decimated the next theory. He said, "Carl, you believe that life started from chemicals in a primordial soup 4 billion years ago. How would life form? How would DNA form, since you know from our biochemistry class, DNA doesn't form from chemical molecules, just in a beaker, in a just a chemical mixture?" And he was right. I knew that, but I never thought of that in terms of evolution. And they did it again. He said, "Well, how would proteins form, since proteins can't form from just chemical mixtures? The law of mass action would prevent that." And I said, "I don't know." And we said, "Well, how could life start? If you can't form DNA, you can't form proteins, you need proteins in the cell membrane to act as the gates. How would you ever square that with this belief that, you know, life formed from chemicals?" And I was dumbfounded again. Then he went on to the theory of evolution. He said, "Carl, the theory of evolution says that a bacteria, small microscopic microorganism, you can't see them, you have to see them under a microscope, a bacteria changed into a shellfish, a bacteria changed into an arthropod like a shrimp, a bacteria changed into a fish, all the big groups of what we call phylum groups." And I said, "Yes." Well, he said, "Carl, and now the number is 1 billion. Museums have collected 1 billion, that's not million, that's a B, billion fossils. And yet we have no fossils between a bacteria and the first shellfish, a bacteria and the first arthropod, a bacteria and the first echinoderm, a bacteria and the first vertebrate or the fish. All the big groups just show up. How would you square that with the theory of evolution, given the fact that the fossil record is so fantastic? We have fossils of bacteria, we have fossils of soft things, even, you know, jellyfish and embryos. You should have seen evolution in the fossil record, and yet they're not there. How could you square that with evolution?" And to be honest with you, Dr. Wilson, I was befuddled, because here I am on a four-year all-tuition science scholarship, and I could not even answer the most basic questions about these three or now four naturalistic theories that were part of this idea that we all formed naturally out of chemicals and evolved from a bacteria. And I just scratched my head. I said, I don't know. And I just more or less walked away from that conversation, knowing that there were facts that supported evolution, I thought, and yet these facts would go against evolution, the Big Bang, the origin of life from chemicals. And I just started out on my own personal quest. I don't know what you would call it, just personal investigation on my own time, my own dime, trying to investigate this thing to see what's wrong. Something has to give here, because either evolution is true or creation is true. They both can't be true. And after, I don't know, whatever it is, 20 years later now, after traveling to all these museums and dig sites and photographing fossils, I now realize that the whole thing was wrong. The whole theory, all these theories are wrong, that there was actually a creation, that there was actually a worldwide cataclysmic flood that laid down the fossil layers. And everyone in your audience should have confidence in this. And if they don't, they just need to get boned up on the topic, because the information's out there now. And everything from ape men to, you know, dinosaurs being at a different time than humans, to the evolutionary chain of life, all of that is corrupt information that the scientists had left out the most important facts when they taught it to me. They left out the most, you know, compelling information to make their story believable when they told it to me. And frankly, it's been a lot of work to sort it out, to get it put together, but now I feel confident in my conclusions that, in fact, my friend's challenge was correct, that evolution does not work. The Big Bang does not work. The origin of life from chemicals does not work. That these layers that we see along the highway, these geological layers were laid down over millions of years, does not work. And I have physical proof for all of these theories, not just, you know, theoretical, but laws of physics, laws of biochemistry, photographs of fossils going through these layers to show that they had to be deposited rapidly. The physical proof is all there, and basically it's just a matter now of communicating this to others, and I believe the theories, all four of those theories have collapsed.
You were on your personal quest or investigation to really find evidence that would support the idea that molecules to man evolution really did occur. Do you remember a point during that, you know, searching and studying on your own that you realized it isn't? It isn't a fact. It's a fallacy. Do you remember that time?
I do, and it's a two-part answer. I remember getting onto the plane, the first plane with my wife, flying out to Denver for the very first, you know, seven museum tour or whatever. And I'm asking myself, okay, I've read now for 10 years, 15 years, what am I going to do if I find that creation is right? And what am I going to do if I find that evolution is right? I had to answer this as an honest scientist. Are you willing to see the answers? Because, you know, there's no point in going on this trip if I already have a preconceived idea. And I knew the evolution was true up until a certain point, and yet I had these doubts based on my friend's discussion. And I just answered the question, yes, I'm going to search this out, and I'm not going to stop short of anything short of the truth. And honestly, it took me another 10 years to have the big ideas collapse when I finally realized, in our second book, which is called Living Fossils, that this whole idea that life in the past was different, that the animals and plants were different, say, during the time of the dinosaurs, that idea was wrong based on the fossils that I saw. See, you know, if the museums are correct and they tell us that during the time of the dinosaurs there were strange plants, strange animals, and dinosaurs living together. No modern birds, no modern, you know, amphibians, no modern this, no modern that. All strange and unusual species and groups of animals. If that's true, evolution had to be true, because you would have a time in the past when you had strange animals and unusual animals that are, and different animals, and now we have today, we have modern animals like dogs and dogwoods and hogs and hedgehogs and sassafras trees. If you only found strange animals with the dinosaurs, then evolution had to be true. And it took, I don't know, 10 years to assemble all these fossils. Debbie photographed, I'll say 100,000 photographs at these now probably 70 museums now. And we realized that they were renaming fossils. So they have a fossil of a sassafras tree. It looks like a modern sassafras leaf, but they won't call it that. They'll call it a different species name. And same with a hedgehog. They don't call it a hedgehog. They call it a different genus and different species, even though it looks exactly like the hedgehog. And same with the boa constrictors that were found with the dinosaurs. None of these are displayed, by the way, with the dinosaurs in the museum. And the same with the modern birds that were found with dinosaurs, the albatross and the ducks and the penguins and, the whole list of birds, cormorants and avocets. Once I realized, and this was way into this project, that modern animals were right next to the dinosaurs, I said, okay, this, now I get this. What they did is they just showed us unusual animals. They forgot to show us the duck that they found with the dinosaur. They forgot to display it. No wonder I had a mixed up vision of what animal life was in the past, because their vision that they portrayed in the museums was that, you know, this is all strange stuff, but the reality is they had left it out. And that was my key moment, because you can always argue, oh, they haven't found enough fossils. Maybe that's why they're not finding the missing links to all of the phyla. But when I found all of the phyla, that would be the shellfish group, the starfish groups, the arthropod group, which is like insects and crustaceans, the vertebrate group, all of the vertebrate group, all of the phyla groups that are living today also were living with the dinosaurs. And we found every animal. We found many, many modern appearing animals and modern appearing plants from all the plant divisions too with the dinosaurs. I realized, oh, it's over. It is. I am satisfied that this whole theory is collapsed, because you can't start life. You can't form a universe naturally. You can't start life naturally. There's no evidence of a bacteria changing into any of these groups. And what we find is just beautiful, perfect animals appearing in the fossil record, and all the layers from the bottom layer to the top have modern animals in them. And all the layers from the bottom layer to the top are saltwater deposited, as evidenced by saltwater creatures in every layer. And it sure sounded like a flood to me that was misinterpreted by scientists in their zeal to support Darwin's theory, that the flood and the remains of the flood, these fossil layers, was misinterpreted as evolution because of the weird way the human mind works. It can see what it wants to see, and it can ignore facts that seem to contradict what is right in front of you, you know?
Well, I really think that was really the key for me that very first evening when you shared your research with us. And my oldest son was very interested at the time. You were very generous in just talking with him and teaching him as well. And I know one of the questions that I had for you was, you know, really based on my study of animal classifications and even teaching my kids that, and I just assumed, you know, I'm too dumb to know how animals get classified, you know. So.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if a scientist says, well, no, this is a completely different kind of creature, it might look like something else, but it's a completely different kind of creature, then I was just like, well, okay, you know, that's, I don't know enough to say what kind of an animal that is. But you showed us that there were fossils that were really indistinguishable, you know, old fossils, indistinguishable from modern day animals, and
beautifully preserved fossils. I mean, it's
right.
not a roughed up fossil. exquisitely preserved fossils with every little detail of the anatomy that would look, which allows you to make a close comparison, counting legs and counting wings and looking at the patterns on the wings. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but the exquisitely preserved fossils look exactly the same as the modern animals.
Yes. And so I asked you, well, why would they call then, you know, they would find a fossil, you know, with the dinosaurs, for example, and they would call it something, a different species, a different creature altogether. And I would say, well, why would they do that? And you explained to me something. The scientist who finds a fossil does what with it?
Well, first of all, the naming system allows, if you find a fossil and you describe it in the scientific journal, then you get to name it. And if you think that there's some slight little bump on your shellfish or some slight difference in the leg length of your dragonfly or whatever, then you can call it a different genus and you can call it a different species. In fact, you will be rewarded for doing that for several reasons. Number one, it makes it look like evolution because you're saying there's a different animal lived with the dinosaurs. Again, that's what everybody did. They renamed these fossils. And number two, at the university, you bragged to your compatriots, hey, I found a new genus of animals in this dinosaur layer. You forget to tell them, well, I want to show you the picture of the modern and this fossil, and you can see for yourself that they really look like the same animal. But I'm not going to show you the pictures because you might think I was, confabulating the name. So I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to show it. I'm just going to tell you in words that instead of Sassafras albidum, we're going to do a Sassafras, some other version of Sassafras. And then your friends will pat you on your back. Wow, you found a new genus, and the genus or species was different than modern. So we then, on paper, using words, describing these fossils, create the illusion of evolution because we say the genus and or species changed. And so life changed. And so evolution is true. And so we did come from the mud, you know. It's incredible to realize how those dots get connected in evolution and why they're necessary, you know.
Yes. And, you know, when I remember asking you, well, I mean, mammals haven't been found with dinosaur fossils, have they? And what did you say?
Well, you know, the reality is that there have been 432 different species of mammals found in dinosaur layers. That's a lot of mammals. Now, most of the museums don't have them displayed. Most of these are smaller mammals, but they have found a modern appearing hedgehog, a modern appearing possum animal. They found I don't have the list in front of me. I don't have the book, but they have found a Tasmanian devil. They have found mammals up to the size of 30 pounds. And this one in China was a Tasmanian devil-like mammal that had a dinosaur in its stomach. So, you know, that's, again, we're shown the dioramas at the museum. There's no mammals on display, or if they are, they're the size of a shrew, or you don't see them because they're hidden in a tree. But the reality is, there was almost as many mammal species, 432, as there were dinosaur species, 650, depending who you how you count them. And they haven't found all of them, and I don't think they ever will because the way these layers are named, and that's another tricky area. But no, they have found modern mammals and modern birds and modern reptiles such as snakes and lizards and box turtles with the dinosaurs. It's not as we have been taught on PBS and the natural history museums and in the textbooks. It's really quite disturbing.
It really is disturbing. And you went on to tell me more that really just encouraged me. You know, I already did not believe that in molecules to man evolution. And maybe we should just take a moment to have you explain the difference between micro and macroevolution, because that causes a lot of confusion when you talk about this issue, doesn't it?
Yes. So like true evolution, Darwin's evolution, it believes in major evolution. They believe that a deer, currently it's a deer evolved into a whale. And I know that's crazy, but that's what they believe right now. I finished the interviews with that scientist. And they would believe that a dinosaur evolved into a bird. And they would believe a fish evolved into an amphibian. The major change, that's what evolution says. But the problem is that within any species or group, like let's say dogs and the groups of dogs, there's variations within them. And you can line up different types of dogs or different kinds of horses, you know, that group, or you could call it a kind, into a line and say, gosh, look, there's evolution. Look at this dog becomes this dog, which becomes this dog, or this beaked finch comes into this beaked finch, which is the beak is a little bit longer. That's just microevolution, and I don't really think it's evolution. I just think it's variation within a species. That everybody can see occurs in nature. You know, there's big people, small people, you know, wide-faced people, narrow-faced, you know, flat-faced people. That's just variation. That's really not evolution, but people call it microevolution. But what Darwin is saying is that a bacteria became a fish. That's major change. Or that some meat-eating dinosaur became a hummingbird over time. You know, that's major change. And that's the part that's missing in the fossil record. Yes, there's variations of T-Rexes in the fossil record. There's variation of starfish in the fossil record. We all see that. But no one can find how the dinosaur formed, the first dinosaur. No one can find how the first starfish formed. You know, you go to the very lowest layers, like the Cambrian, and there's a shrimp just show up. And you know, jellyfish just show up. You know, very complicated animals. The macroevolution from a bacteria to the next step is all missing. For every group, not just one group, but for every group.
Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the very disturbing findings that you have, right? And
oh, my God.
Can you tell us? I know.
It goes on and on, and I don't have enough time to tell people, you know. I need 8 hours to explain
I know you don't, but could you tell us maybe just kind of in broad strokes about a couple of other reasons why we can safely teach our kids to be competent in creation? Because I can tell you as a longtime Christian homeschooling mom that it is just about impossible to get away from evolution and evolutionary teaching. I know one time we went on it was an excellent field trip, but it was in a quarry, and the man giving us the field trip said, you know, how old do you think this quarry is? And, you know, the rock layers and that kind of thing. And I think one of the kids said, oh, like 6 to 10,000 years old. And and the man laughed and he said, no, this is millions and millions of years old. I mean, you just can't get away from it on television. You can't get away from it in books.
Can I address that?
Yeah, please do.
A photographic fact that nobody teaches the children, and it's really terrible, and that we're going to do this in one of our upcoming books, is the fact that there were trees deposited in rock layers. Like, you know, you see fossilized trees out of petrified forest in Arizona, but those trees are like horizontal. They're laying flat. And they stay in one layer. But there's, in Nova Scotia, and in fact all over the world, there are trees that stay and go upright and go through 3-4 layers. And I have photographs of these and video interviews about these with the scientists. And this is the simplest way to get to the bottom of this, is how could a tree stay standing upright for millions of years for 3 or 4 layers of rock to form around it, different layers, you know, gray, then a sandstone and a limestone, 3 or 4 layers. This tree goes through 3 or 4 layers going upright. wouldn't the tree fall over at 100 years when it died of old age? And once it died, it rots and falls over. How could a tree stay standing upright for 4 million years for these layers to be deposited? And you know what? There's no answer to that. And the only answer that works is that those trees were laid down in a cataclysmic flood, and Dr. Steve Austin did the work for that. And it would take a little bit of time to explain how it happens, but it's very simple. The trees went down to the bottom of the water, and the layers were brought in from top as granules coming down as waves came in and deposited sediment-filled water, and the water then filtered out, and the sediment went around each tree. Different layers were formed around one tree very quickly. But I think that's the quickest answer. But mm-hmm. you'd have to see the photographs, and nobody, even when I read these geology books and evolution books, nobody discusses it. They don't even know what I'm talking about, you know. And yet it's the single most important geological fact on the Earth, and nobody even knows. Everybody knows what igneous rocks are and metamorphic and sedimentary rocks. You know, everybody knows what limestone and sandstone is, but nobody seems to even know about these vertical trees going through 3 and 4 layers that are found throughout the world. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carl, I know that your latest work is going to be on human evolution. And can you give us just a little bit of confidence? Give us a little confidence booster that we don't have to worry that we evolved from apes because of the research that you've done.
Very quickly, the scientists love to talk about the latest fossils found, but they very much do not want to talk about the fossils that were found earlier, pronounced as an ape man, and then turned out to be something else. And if you only are told about the fossils that are factual and seem to be hold up, the latest fossils, it seems like the evidence is clear cut. But when you review the fossils from the beginning, let's say the ape men for the first 100 years, the way they were presented as ape men and what they actually turned out to be, all of them were wrong. For example, Darwin thought black people, you know, black human beings like Barack Obama, Darwin thought Barack Obama, that race of people, black skin, was ape men. It's hard to say that out loud mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. sounding so ridiculous. And Darwin's relatives thought that Jewish people were some kind of throwback people. And then Neanderthal was supposed to be an ape man, but now it's been renamed Homo sapiens. And then there was the crazy ones, like they found a dolphin rib in Libya, and they said, oh, this is an ape man. You know, and someone else in South America, Florentino Ameghino, found this leg bone, but it turned out to be from the raccoon family. But he said, oh, it's an ape man. And then, you know, the president of the American Museum of Natural History, who, by the way, renounced his belief in human evolution from apes in the 1920s, finds that before he renounced it, he finds this tooth. He thinks it's an ape man. It turns out to be a pig's tooth, you know, and it goes on and on and on and on and on like that, where you start saying, okay, I know that you're teaching that human evolution is true, but when you look at the big picture, step back and look at all the fossils, it looks like you guys don't know what the heck you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, how mm-hmm. could you mistake a dolphin rib for an ape man collarbone? I'm serious. And how could mm-hmm. the best scientists in the world at the Natural History Museum in London not understand that they had an orangutan jaw in front of them? And when they x-rayed it, they said, oh, look, it's human teeth, you know. And yet it was an orangutan. They later realized that, you know, they missed it, you know. And it just goes on and 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 on. Now, my count is way over 50 examples of this, of where they are so sure they found, you know, proof of Darwin's ape men. And then 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 90, sometimes it takes 100 years to realize, no, it was just an orangutan. Nope, sorry. It was just a raccoon. Nope. It took us a long time to realize that Ramapithecus, Cyvapithecus were just an orangutan. And orangutans aren't supposed to have anything to do with human evolution. And yet they found orangutan ape fossils, and they called them ape men, you know. So if there's ever a time to have confidence in creation, it's the year 2013. If you don't have confidence in creation, it's because you just haven't connected up with the information yet. And the information is compelling, so much so that Bill Nye's friends are telling him, don't debate Ken Ham. Are you crazy? And they're saying, oh, it'll be bad for science. But the reality is, no, if you're going to win a debate, it would not be bad for science. It's bad for science because he's going to get smothered by Ken Ham's facts of the starting of life from chemicals. It just doesn't work. The fossil record doesn't work. None of this works, you know?
Right. Well, Carl, I hate to say it, but you can't go to everyone's homes like you did for us. I don't know how many years ago it's been now. And bring your amazing photographs, your amazing books, amazing videos that you've shown to us. And it's just not possible. You can't go to all of our homes and give a presentation that will just have your kids going, I will never, ever believe in evolution. But you can order a copy of one of Carl's books or a copy of one of his videos. Our youngest son is actually in a very short cameo role in his first video, Carl's first video. That was really fun.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yes. Little Nick is there in the first video. And these materials are just spectacular. I mean, the photography is incredible. And you can not only use these materials to teach your children. And Carl, what grade level have you kind of written them for?
I would say from fifth grade, a smart fifth grader or a sixth grader on up, all the way through an adult. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you can use those with your kids, read them together, discuss them, but it's a fantastic resource just even with friends and family who don't believe. You know, I think it's very difficult to talk with someone who's heavily invested in evolution, who has no faith at all. That's going to be a tough row to hoe. I'm not discouraging anyone from doing that. I just think it's a tougher thing to do. But it's much easier to talk with Christians who think that somehow the Bible and evolution coexist. They aren't really sure. And that's really where I was many years ago. I just didn't worry about it. I believed in God. I believed the Bible. But I also thought that evolution had to be true. And there are many, many people out there like that. You might even be one of them listening to this podcast. And if you are, I really encourage you to get a copy of one of Carl's books. Carl, your first book is Evolution, the Grand Experiment.
Yes.
And the second is Living Fossils, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. And
there's a video that goes along with each book, and there's a teacher's manual that goes along with each book, and you can use them all together to do a little homeschool class or, you know, a public public school class too, with the teacher's manual, the DVD, which is the television show, and then the book itself. And they are spectacular materials. I mean, there's a lot of work went into them.
Oh, wow. I mean, they really are. And it's not like so many books where you read the book and then you don't want to see the movie. This one is not like that. I mean, I feel like the movie, the video is very just supportive. It just kind of summarizes it, brings it to life. And there is new material in each of the videos that is not included in the book as well. And I am just really excited to see what you're going to be doing in the future. What are you working on right now?
Well, we have just traveled, I would say another 60,000 miles. We went to Spain, Africa, and for this next book, and Australia. And we're finishing up the Human Evolution series, and the book is going to come out hopefully later this year. Excuse my phone in the background. And then the video will be following. So the Human Evolution series is coming right now.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
And it will be spectacular. It is a great, great material. I'm telling you, the content, most people have not heard the content. Even a lot of the anthropologists will be surprised at the material.
Well, I really am looking forward to it. And I count it as one of my most blessed days when my husband said yes to having you come over and talk with us. I mean, I can't even imagine if we would have said no. It's just so laughable to me now, you know.
Oh, my gosh. We've had so much fun over the years.
We have. And
your family is so neat, so warm.
Oh.
And your family has adopted Debbie and I, and we have a great love for you, your husband, and all your children. We just love you guys to pieces.
Oh, well, it's definitely mutual. And I told you this before, but I'm going to say it again, that I told another homeschooling mom that I knew you, and she was just floored. It's like I know this science celebrity. And I'm very proud of that, and I will just really eagerly anticipate the day when more people know about your fantastic work and just even get to know you personally, because if they do, they will really be blessed. But I want to do a couple of things before we say goodbye. And the first is, where is the best place for people to go to find your materials?
Well, if you would like to order the book or the homeschool pack over the phone, if you don't like using your credit card over the internet, the best way would be to dial the 800 number for our resource area, and that number is 1-800-771-2147. It's 800-771-2147. The next best is if you want to look at the materials or order the materials to find out what's appropriate for homeschool or a classroom setting, I would suggest they go to our website. It's called thegrandexperiment.com. And on there, you can preview some of the videos just to see what kind of quality is in these videos. And you can preview what other people are saying about the videos and what evolution scientists are saying about it, and what different organizations that are Christian or creation, what they're saying about it. And that's all on the website called thegrandexperiment.com. There's no spaces between those words. And then if you just like ordering through Amazon, because, you get free shipping because you're some special setup there, you just Google my name, Carl Werner Evolution, or The Grand Experiment, and you'll see all the products. There's one book, one video, one teacher's manual for each of the books in the series. And there's two out, and the third one will be out later this year. The third one will be titled Human Evolution.
Well, I'm going to do everyone a favor and put all of that information in the show notes for this episode. If you go to ultimateradioshow.com, click on the Homeschool Sanity Show, you can scroll down and look for how to give your kids confidence in creation, and you will find that information that you need. But I'm going to do you one more favor, because I'm just so thankful that Carl took the time to be with us today. We are going to offer one fortunate reader at psychowith6.com a free copy of Evolution, the Grand Experiment. So you can go there and enter to win a copy. And if you don't, of course, you can always purchase one where Carl mentioned, and you will not regret it, trust me. So, Carl, thank you so much. You are a very busy person, and you have done me and our listeners just a huge favor by coming and talking with us.
Oh, it's so fun to be with you guys, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share with your listeners and with you, and you do a great service to provide some sanity to all the homeschool moms who I know just work like, you know, like anything, just to keep everything flowing, the food and the schoolwork and the keeping the house in order. Is just a great service to help the families with their families.
Thank you, Carl, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the Homeschool Sanity Show with Dr. Melanie Wilson. Visit Melanie at psychowith6.com, that's the number 6, for more sanity-saving ideas. The Homeschool Sanity Show is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.